I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the big, beautiful bill is on its way to Trump's desk, although the one big, beautiful bill, as Nicole reminded me, it's called this morning. I forgot the O on the BBB. Congressman Dan Newhouse will join us from D.C. Plus, the Seattle Times brings a whole new meaning to the term fake news. And Washington State's hate crime hotline is now online. You know what to do. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What a killer deal. Right? Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. Welcome to today's edition of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Much like Congress, we all soon will be enjoying our 4th of July holiday because the House just passed the one big beautiful bill after a touch and go situation overnight. Then Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat leader, and I don't get this stuff, spoke for like 8 hours and 30 minutes plus, tried to break some record for holding the floor, which doesn't do anything. It's just like delaying the inevitable. And that's fine. And there was like people falling asleep behind him, and it was just all totally unnecessary. And after that happened, this was about an hour and a half ago, House Speaker Mike Johnson took to the floor after Hakeem Jeffries and gave a much shorter speech. Here's part of it.
I just want to say something that many of us learned when we were children. We were taught, you know, it takes a lot longer to build a lie than to tell the simple truth.
Oh, wow.
Mr. Speaker, with one big, beautiful bill, we are going to make this country stronger, safer, and more prosperous than ever before. And every American is going to benefit from that.
Yeah. So look, is that true? I don't know. Every American's going to benefit from it, maybe whether they like it or not. I know increased border security is going to be a good thing. Had they not passed it, if you've got kids, your taxes would have gone way, way, way up as some of the tax reductions would have expired. So I think this is a situation where not everyone's getting everything they want. They might get what they need, even if they don't know they need it. So here's the ultimate vote that happened just a few minutes ago.
On this vote, the yeas are 218, the nays are 214. The motion is adopted.
Oh, yes. A little USA chant to send us into the Independence Day holiday. So there were still two Republican no votes, Massey and Fitzpatrick. I don't know if that's a particular surprise, but they could have afforded to lose three. So they made it. That's all you need. So we, in full transparency, spoke with Congressman Dan Newhouse just as Hakeem Jeffries was wrapping up his marathon speech on the floor. And so Congressman Newhouse of Washington State's 4th District, a Republican, was able to sneak away to sort of update us on things. So it was just before it passed. But we wanted to ask him in part, he was spotted going into the White House yesterday. And, you know, I think it's worth noting, as this CNN reporter did, she took a picture, a blurry picture, but we can tell that's him. Says half a dozen centrist-leaning R's have been entering the West Wing this AM, per our White House team. Among them, Velotto and Newhouse, the last two House Republicans in office who voted to impeach Trump in 2021. Safe to say they don't get invited there very often. That's cold. That's cold. Aren't bygones bygones by now? But, you know, like many other Republicans in Congress and out of Congress, there were Republicans who had some concerns, including Dan Newhouse, about the One Big Beautiful Bill, things he was worried about. And so that clearly to us was the timing for his visit. But we, in addition to asking him about everything that's happened in the last 48 hours around the big, beautiful bill and his visit to the White House yesterday, we talked to him about all of it about an hour and a half ago. Congressman Newhouse, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you, Brandi. Appreciate you taking some time to talk about what's going on in D.C.
Yeah, sure. What's happening? Did you get any sleep last night?
Maybe 2 hours.
Yeah. So what do you think went wrong yesterday? I mean, I know that the speaker sort of opened it for the vote on the rule. And was that sort of a test of putting people on the spot? Or what's the strategy in doing that when you didn't think or know you had the votes?
There's a kind of an art to this, I suppose. When it's time to vote, it's it's time to vote, right? And a lot of people have second thoughts or perhaps aren't quite fully decided what they're going to do. But in the legislative process, there's only an up or down, and that decision is hard sometimes. So, yeah, a little bit of pressure by having a deadline like putting it up on the floor sometimes brings people along. We did have an issue, though, with several holdouts, as you probably saw. We kept the board open all night, or up until like 5 or 4 o'clock. I'm not even sure. Number math is the first thing to go, just so you know. And some folks were, I guess, bargaining with the speaker on to try to get some of their viewpoints better represented, to try to understand what was in the bill, which is fair. You know, it was, there's a lot of stuff there that the Senate did, and we had a very short time. And so, you know, that's fair to try to learn what's in the bill. And I think those people were satisfied with what they were able to come up with, and eventually voted in favor, and then we're off to the races.
You got photographed walking into the White House yesterday. What was that visit for?
There were some of us that had some questions about some things in the bill, some concerns, and we were invited to the White House to talk through some of those things. So it was mostly an informational help us understand kind of a meeting, and it went well. We had about 15 or 20 of my colleagues, along with the president, the vice president, and the administrator of the CMS, and had a good conversation for, gosh, hour and a half, I think it was, and answered some questions. Not all, but it helped us to get a better feeling for what the bill's objectives, what the details are, and I think it brought a lot of people along to where they felt more comfortable voting for it.
What were some things that you had trepidation about? Or maybe still
Well, the
do?
Biggest thing, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff in this bill, Brandy. There really is, from border security to the tax increases that we're avoiding to, you know, stuff for agriculture, stuff I've been fighting for several years is in this bill. And so there's just a lot of good things. There's some questions about, we wanted to, me in particular, I wanted to make sure that the things that are happening in Medicaid don't negatively impact the people that I represent. And so I had some questions about some of the things that are going on there. And there's, the Senate did add something that we didn't have in the House. And that's this, for lack of, it's got a formal name, but it's the hospital fund for rural hospitals. That's truly going to help, you know, I think, just back of the envelope math, will likely bring into our state over $1 billion in the next 5 years to help rural hospitals through the transition of some of the reforms that we're making, and help the state of Washington also step up to the plate in some of their participation and contributions to Medicaid issues. So that helped me a lot, that if we have something to help hospitals and Medicaid recipients through this transition, that's a really good thing. It gives us a lot of time.
On that front, Governor Bob Ferguson was in your district the other day, made a big show of it, mentioned you and Congressman Baumgartner by name, said, "I went to the Tri-Cities to urge Congress to abandon their harmful budget that proposes the largest cut to Medicaid in history," talked about how it'll hurt your constituents, children. Did the governor or the governor's staff contact you prior to that visit?
Not at all. We had no idea they were going to be there. And, you know, it was interesting to find out that some of the things that I've been saying are, he categorized me as being morally bankrupt, which I take huge exception to. I've been working very hard on the behalf of my constituents. You know, that's, he even accused me of just reverting to Republican talking points. And then he goes right into Democrat talking points. You know, the thing that drives me nuts about this, Brandy, if you don't mind me kind of opinionating a little bit here.
Please.
In fact, the minority leader, who I think has just finished up, just spent 8 hours presenting examples of individuals around the country in many different congressional districts saying these people are being harmed by this bill. when every single one of them, and I listened to a good share of the speech, it was 8 hours long, every single one of those individuals are covered under Medicaid in our legislation. They are not being kicked off of Medicaid. And so to me, that is what's morally bankrupt, to scare the daylights out of people who are arguably in a very vulnerable position in order to gain political points. To me, that's unconscionable. And that happens time after time when they're trying to, all they're doing is looking towards November of 26. They want to gain power back, and they'll do it any way they can.
Yeah, and please, if you have to head back to the floor, just up and leave on us. But on that front, on political gamesmanship and showmanship, you know, Governor Ferguson, from his official account, saying Representatives Newhouse and Baumgartner should meet face-to-face with those affected in their district. I'll be happy to join as well. I hope they're willing to have those conversations. Had the governor or the governor's staff reached out to you about his concerns with the big, beautiful bill, would you have been willing to entertain a conversation with him prior to him or during him showing up in your district?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no secrets here what we're trying to do. We're trying to be very transparent. So I'd be happy to have that kind of a conversation with him in the room or whoever he wants to send. But we had no indication that that particular appearance was going to happen. But
yeah.
No, he's been in touch with our office a couple of times. I can't say he has not been. But yeah, we would welcome that that opportunity. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just love he's shaming you for not having conversations when he never reached out for a conversation. Let's end with this. Obviously, midterms coming up. You're no stranger to midterm challenges or to election challenges, even from the right. Elon Musk says if it's the last thing he does on this earth, he will try to help primary opponents of Republicans who vote for the big, beautiful bill. Are you worried?
Am I worried?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Elon, there's a lot of great things you can say about Elon Musk. Smart guy. He's built a tremendous, you know, empire of different activities, and I think he'll continue to do that. But he also has some, I guess, you're getting me with very little sleep here, so be careful what I say.
That's all right.
You know, there's some potential, you know, very things that are personal to him in this bill. Some of the tax credits for electric vehicles, those kind of things that, you know, hit him directly. And so I can understand why he's not too happy with the legislation in some regards. But, you know, I think in the end, and you've characterized it, I've had several challenges. In the end, my constituents, the people in my district, I think feel good that I've done as much as I can to represent them as best as I can, and I'll continue to communicate that and, you know, look forward to any conversation with Mr. Musk as well.
All right, Congressman, we'll let you get back to the floor. We do appreciate you carving out some time for us this morning.
Thank you. The speaker is just stepping up to the microphone, so I'm going to run. And we'll get this over the finish line. Thank
you. All right. We'll watch you on TV.
All right. Bye-bye.
So, and again, that was just before the vote actually happened and the speaker spoke. So that's been done. The one big, beautiful bill. I was calling it the big, beautiful bill today. Nicole's like, it's one big, beautiful bill. The one big, beautiful bill will be signed, we believe, by the president on the 4th of July. So quite a good timing, I guess, for the president, the way it all worked out. And we'll see in the coming days. I mean, look, you know, Democrats are always going to oppose really anything Republicans are going to want to do and vice versa. So maybe it made them feel better by having Hakeem Jeffries speak for 8 hours and they can go home feeling good about themselves over that. But we appreciate the congressman taking time to join us. And I'm glad he's getting invites to the White House. Maybe we can, you know, rebuild bridges and stuff. Who knows? All right. I rarely get as pissed off as I was last night, fuming on my sofa over a headline I saw in the Seattle Times. But before I rail on the Seattle Times over it, and it's bad even for the Seattle Times, like the title of today's show, it is fake news on steroids. It is like beyond fake news. I don't even know what to call the Seattle Times anymore. But before I get into that, you know, I do want to talk about the very serious sort of nuts and bolts of this story and reflect on, you know, the tragedy of it all before I dive into my political frustrations with the news media. So the illegal alien who killed Washington State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd in 2024 has now been sentenced to around 11 years in prison for vehicular homicide, Raul Benitez Santana. And a lot of people are remarking that that is a particularly low sentence, actually, for vehicular homicide, that's a pretty high-end sentence. Vehicular homicide isn't treated like homicide, really, in the state of Washington, and that's because they look at it as, well, you didn't go out with the intention of killing someone. I would argue if you're driving 100 miles an hour plus, high and drunk, you went out knowing very well that you could kill someone, and Benitez Santana did that day. He killed Trooper Gadd, who was on I-5 to do impaired driving emphasis patrols. When Benitez Santana slammed into the back of him at well in excess of 100 miles an hour. So 11 years, I will say, is more than I even thought that Benitez Santana would get. It's not what I think he deserves. I certainly think he deserves a lot more than that. And we shouldn't even be having this conversation because he should have been removed from the country a long time ago. He's an illegal national of Mexico, had multiple run-ins with law enforcement prior to this even happening. So if we weren't a sanctuary state, the likelihood is really high he would have been deported from the country and he wouldn't have been on the road driving high and drunk, speeding that night, and Trooper Christopher Gadd would still be alive. So again, before I get into the political sort of anger and anger at the media, I do just want to recognize, again, the significant loss that Christopher Gadd's death was and is, certainly for his family, his wife Cameron. They were married for only 4 years and so young, and they'd been together for 9 years total. At the time when Christopher died, they had a two-year-old daughter, so I think she's probably three or four now, which is just devastating, and now she doesn't have a father. I would also note that Trooper Gadd's dad is a trooper, Trooper David Gadd, who was in the courtroom for the sentencing yesterday, along with the chief of the Washington State Patrol, John Batiste, who also attended the sentencing. And Trooper Gadd was brand new to the force. He'd only been a state trooper for 2.5 years, and this is someone who just everyone loved, you know, and hearing from state troopers, many of whom went to every day of trial, he just had such a wonderful attitude, wanted to serve with his father at a really, really difficult time. And when you think about that, that he joined the force 2.5 years ago, think of what was happening in this state at the time that he was entering the Trooper Academy. I mean, we were in arguably one of the worst climates that we've ever been in, not only in our state, but nationally for members of law enforcement. And he decided to stand up, take the call to serve his community like his father. And he paid for it with his life in a state like ours. So I just want to recognize the loss here. I mean, there's a lot going on with this particular story, but just very, very sad. And I'm thinking about his family and his friends and his colleagues at the Washington State Patrol today. So now let me rant a little bit. I see this, and look, this was the truth. This was the case from the beginning, where the mainstream news media just refused to acknowledge the fact that the guy who killed Trooper Gadd was in the country illegally. You would read some of the first stories that came out from the Seattle Times about it, and it wouldn't even mention that Benitez was an illegal, because that's just how they are, right? They're hopelessly biased. But this is the kind of stuff that pisses me off so much. So this was a post the Seattle Times put out after this sentence came down. A Washington man was sentenced to 10 years in prison Wednesday for a 2024 crash that killed a state trooper, a Washington man. He is not a Washington man. He killed a Washington man. He risked the lives of countless other Washingtonians when he was driving in excess of 100 miles an hour high and drunk. But he is not a Washington man. He's a Mexican national who's been living in this state illegally. Do you think that I could, any other country on the planet, that I could go there legally or illegally, kill someone, let alone a member of law enforcement, and that the local news media would refer to me as a citizen of that country or that state or that city? No, they'd say American woman came into our country and killed one of our citizens. Nowhere else on earth would a story like this be reported like that. A Washington man. It's genuinely insulting. And that aside, it's hiding information from your readers. It's gaslighting them. His immigration status is relevant to the story. Now, do American citizens go out driving high and drunk and kill people? Yeah, it happens all the time. It happens all the time. But in this case, he happened to be in the country illegally It's not the first time he's broken the law. And because of our sanctuary policies, he was shielded and he got to break the law in coming here and then break the law in staying here over and over and over again. So there are more relevant layers to the story that from the beginning, the Seattle Times just chose to ignore. Now, at least in this article, and let me just also say really quick, when I read a headline like that, after all the coverage we've done and all the public shaming of the Seattle Times we've done over this story in particular, and then on the day this guy is sentenced, they keep doing it in the headlines, Washington man. I just think to myself, they have to be, it has to be now an intentional F you to us. Like, oh, we know Brandy's out there railing about this, so we're going to put it in here anyway. Washington man. Just to trigger them. And then when I read the story, I feel like I have proof of that. This is honest to God in the story. The case has gotten considerable attention from right-wing media outlets and social media personalities because Benitez Santana is in the U.S. illegally and his attorneys attempted to get the charges dismissed because prosecutors communicated with ICE in violation of state law. Think about it. The case has gotten considerable attention from right-wing media outlets and social media personalities. First of all, the case should be getting significant attention from everyone. A state trooper died. I've been covering the news in this state for a long time. Anytime a member of law enforcement dies or is killed in the line of duty, not dies, killed, murdered in the line of duty, let me choose my words very carefully, it gets significant attention because it's a significant event. But in this case, it's only getting significant attention because the right-wing news media, you know they're referring to me. Come on, who else are they referring to? The right-wing news media and social media personalities are mad that this guy's illegal? No, we're mad that he's illegal and that he killed a state trooper. We're mad that he's illegal and he's committed crimes here before. We're mad that he's illegal and our sanctuary policies protected him from deportation. We're mad over all of it. But it shouldn't be a right-wing issue. And are you telling me that that's only something that upsets the right wing? Is that an admission that the left isn't mad about it? Is that an admission that the left is not mad when someone comes into our country illegally and kills a state trooper? Because that's what it sounds like, Seattle Times. That sounds like an admission that it doesn't bother you one bit. And it doesn't bother them one bit because I had to look. So this is a pretty lengthy article. I want to show you how much of this article they dedicated to painting Raul Benitez Santana's ordeal as a sob story. Take a look at this. If you're watching the show highlighted in yellow, that entire chunk, which I would say is a fourth of the news, the entire story, is about painting a sob story about this illegal immigrant and how he's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. In a story about him being sentenced to 11 years for murdering a state trooper, that is how much space in the article the Seattle Times dedicates to trying to personalize and empathize with the illegal alien criminal. Let me read part of it to you. I'll just read it. I just read the first part about how, oh, it got significant attention from right-wing media. Though Benitez Santana's immigration status wasn't explicitly discussed Wednesday, defense attorney Emily Hancock, who represented him alongside Tiffany Mecca, told the judge Benitez Santana came to the U.S. as a six-month-old baby. He grew up in Berrien, worked in his family's auto body shop, and moved to Everett shortly before the fatal crash. And this is a quote from his defense attorney. When Raul was 16, he learned something about his identity that changed what opportunities would be available to him and how he would be seen amongst his community members and other members of Washington State. A father of three, Hancock said, Benitez Santana has been in daily contact with his children and has taken parenting and other classes while in jail. She said Benitez Santana is absolutely remorseful, but had been instructed not to show any emotion during trial because his every expression would be scrutinized by jurors, members of the media, and other courtroom attendees. Hancock also said Benitez Santana has been advised not to exercise his right to speak during sentencing because it could impact his appeal. I mean, this is an illegal alien who killed a cop. Oh, he's been here and he works at his family's auto body shop and he's been taking parenting classes and he is remorseful and he's just didn't look remorseful during the proceedings because everybody would say something about his facial expressions because he's in the country illegally. So now I want you to compare that to, also visually speaking, the amount of space they dedicated to personalizing and getting people to sympathize with Benitez Santana and the amount of space in the article they gave to personalizing the actual victim, State Trooper Christopher Gadd. The same. The exact same space. They spent just as much time personalizing the illegal alien killer as they did personalizing Trooper Christopher Gadd. And they left that to the end. They personalized the killer before they personalized the victim in the story. So if you didn't make it that far down in the Seattle Times article, as we know so many readers don't, well, you would have just read them personalizing the killer because they prioritized that. Oh, and then by the way, if you wanted to get into the comments section and point out some of these clear journalistic failures, they turned comments off. So you can't comment on the story. Wonder why, gee. They say it's because it's a particularly sensitive story. No, because you don't want people to go in there and rail at you for calling him a Washington man and painting his sad story about, you know, being in the U.S. illegally. And I never got this when they say, well, he's been here for so 15 years or so. He's been here for 15, 20 years. Why do they always think that it makes it more sad if you've been here illegally longer? It's like, no, you got away with it for much longer. And it's not an instance, by the way, where he came here as a baby, because I've said I support citizenship for DACA recipients. I think if you were brought here into this country through no fault of your own, when you were a tiny baby, it looks like he was brought here at 6 months old, and you came here and you started going to school here and you worked here and you paid taxes and you didn't commit any new law violations, then maybe you should get citizenship if you were a DACA recipient. This isn't that. He had new law violations. Significant law violations. And even with those, under the protection of our sanctuary policies, he felt so compelled, so safe, so untouchable here, that he got high and drunk, and then he drove at over 100 miles an hour into the back of a state trooper. And then his defense team had the audacity to argue at trial that he couldn't possibly get a fair trial because he's in the country as illegally. Woe is him. And all the right-wing media outlets will paint him as a bad guy. Well, hate to break it to you, he is a bad guy. He is a bad guy. You wouldn't know that by reading the Seattle Times, because the Seattle Times treats an illegal alien murderer the same as they treat a hero Washington State Patrol trooper. In their eyes, there is no daylight between the two of them. It is absolutely shameful. It's beyond shameful. And I used to hate the phrase fake news. In fact, if you were industrious, you could probably search in my past social media posts and find a time way back when I was working in mainstream news that I encouraged anyone who used the phrase fake news to just unfollow me, because it bothered me so much. Now, do I think that the phrase fake news has been applied to people who haven't deserved it? Yes. But I absolutely believe fake news is a thing. I absolutely believe the Seattle Times is one of the worst offenders. And I, as much as I would like to, again, ignore them and be like, well, they're irrelevant. I mean, our daily reach on social media exceeds the reach of the Seattle Times. It just does. It's not even close in terms of if you're comparing our social media reach to their circulation. But we're reaching people who are like-minded. We're reaching people who look at this and be like, oh my God, what the hell is the Seattle Times talking about? We're reaching people who already think independently and critically about these issues. The Seattle Times is just feeding the beast that allows Democrats to stay in power in Washington State. That's who's reading the Seattle Times, is the vote blue no matter who crowd. And they read stories like this and they form a particular narrative about it, about, oh, this is just an illegal immigrant. This is an immigrant who's being treated unfairly. Doesn't matter if he killed a state trooper. The Seattle Times has lost its damn mind. Absolutely insane.
I also think they're excusing it by that. You read that statement. When he was 16, he learned something about his identity that changed what opportunities would be available to him and how he would 100%. Be seen amongst the community members. And so it's okay.
He just lived a life of crime.
Life of crime is the society's fault because of how they treat him.
Absolutely. It is insane. And that's what it is. You're giving people reasons to sympathize with him. Seattle Times, it's the worst, one of the worst outlets in the entire country. Absolutely insane. How offensive to spend as much time in that article painting a sympathetic picture of the killer as you did painting a sympathetic picture of the state trooper who lost his life serving our communities. You should be ashamed of yourselves. ashamed of yourselves. It's disgusting. All right. Let's have a little fun with this one. So we've been talking about the upcoming hate crime hotline that the state of Washington is launching, and they're all dead set on. They have the Domestic Violent Extremism Task Force, which was a brainchild of Bob Ferguson, which, as you know, and as we've been covering, seems singularly focused on right-wing extremism, which almost doesn't exist in Washington. And they start all these meetings by introducing themselves with their gender pronouns and then talk about how bad white people are and Christian nationalists and all this stuff. And it's like, and doing it literally while Antifa is rioting in downtown Seattle. Totally ignore that. Totally ignore the 15 plus years we've had of frequent left-wing extremism. So it's totally a farce. But the thing is, and our concern has always been, that they're just going to keep growing this and expanding it as a way to target conservatives. And one of the mechanisms that will allow them to do that and dedicate more funds is their hate crime hotline. So the hate crime hotline, which has been in the works, is now officially up and running. Okay? It says, report hate, get support. Whether it happened to you or to someone else, you're not alone. We're here for you to report hate and get the support you need. Let me give you this number, shall I? 1-855-225-1010. 1-855-225-1010. And you can report a hate crime online via the state's hate crime hotline. Now, what do you think is going to happen here? Because there's a couple things that are important to understand about this hate crime. This is not a police response. This is not someone deciding, I was the victim of a hate crime, I'm going to report it to police so police can investigate the hate crime and get to the bottom of it. Because if you were really the victim of a hate crime, isn't that what you would do? There's already a hate crime hotline. 911. 911. So why do we need a separate hotline to report a crime, a specific type of crime? Well, because this isn't about getting to the bottom of these alleged hate crimes. This is about stacking the numbers. This is about inflating hate crime numbers so that they can justify spending more money on things like their farce of a domestic violent extremism task force, so that they can justify pushing laws to restrict speech, to criminalize speech, to go after conservatives. This is what the hate crime hotline, it says, if you click on the About More. So it says the Hate Crime and Bias Incidents Hotline is where you can report hate and get support. The line is to support victims and help track hate crimes and bias incidents. We want to support people who've witnessed or been the target of hate crimes and bias incidents. Refer people to services that can help. We are not the police and we do not report to the police without your permission. And here's the key one. Inform Washington's legislature, governor, law enforcement, and community about the extent of the problem. There is no standard when you call this hate crime hotline, and they say it here. They don't work with the police. They'll refer you to contact the police if you want to pursue criminal charges. And they go through in this website and it says, click to learn more about what happens on the hotline. And they'll go through basically how the conversation will go. It is not the job of the hotline to question whether you were actually the victim of a hate crime. It's their job to mark you down as a statistic. So who do you think is going to be utilizing the hate crime hotline? People who are easily triggered, frankly. It's going to be people who are misgendered. It's going to be people who watch this show and feel attacked because apparently I'm a transphobe, horrible, racist human being. It's going to be a bunch of lefties who suffer microaggressions and who are going to call this hotline and report them as hate crimes. And without any question or factual basis, it will be recorded as a bias incident that they will then use to inform Washington's legislature, governor, law enforcement, and community about the extent of the problem. So they'll justify more tax. Oh my gosh, hate crimes are through the roof. We have a hate problem in Washington State. One of the most, like, supposed to be tolerant places in the world. But of course, there's one side that has become incredibly intolerant. I mean, gosh, you have a Trump bumper sticker on your car? hey, crime hotline, that's going to happen. You don't think that's going to happen? So now all of a sudden, give it a year, 2 years, our hate crime numbers will be through the roof. Now, never mind that a lot of them don't actually qualify as hate crimes under law, but as far as the legislature is concerned, boop, mark one down. So this will be used to go after people like you and I. Make no mistake. People who speak out against radical gender ideology, who don't want boys competing against girls. Hate crime, hate crime, hate crime, hate crime. So here's what we're going to do, because we have to do it. Because that's the outcome if we don't do it. We're going to call this hotline. We're going to call the hotline. We're going to use the website function. And we're going to start reporting hate crimes and bias incidents. Like, for instance, the attack on Cam Higby outside the federal courthouse, which was absolutely motivated by hate. That's not even an inappropriate use of the hotline. We know there are far more hate-fueled incidents perpetrated by the left and the right in Washington state. It's not even close. You think about every Tesla that was vandalized. You think about every synagogue that was vandalized. You think about members of Congress, like Congresswoman Kim Schreier and Congressman Adam Smith, who had their homes vandalized because they support Israel too much. Me being attacked outside the ICE facility? All the anti-cop graffiti all over the city and all over the federal building? The hateful rhetoric being spewed at Christians who were peacefully assembled in Cal Anderson Park? The hate-filled rhetoric spewed at people leaving the Riley Gaines event at the University of Washington? The violent takeover of a building at the University of Washington. The vile pro-Hamas speeches spewed in the quad at the University of Washington. Every single one of them has to be reported to the hate crime hotline. 1-855-225-1010. 1-855-225-1010. And that's not even a misuse. That's not even an abuse of the hotline. I'm not telling you to call the hotline and make stuff up. I'm telling you to call the hotline and make sure that there is a proportionate number of reports involving left-wing lunatics as there are microaggressions from the right. If we do our jobs correctly, and if this hotline does what it's, you know, what should be done, 99% of the reports should be about left-wing extremism. Because that's, I would even argue, it's probably 99.9% of the hate-filled, hate-motivated crimes in the state of Washington are left-wing. Did I make that number up? Yeah, but I feel like we have pretty good evidence that it is a very, very rare instance where we have some sort of right-wing extremism happening here. So that's what we have to do. And you know what will happen? Now, I don't expect them to get all that data and suddenly have this epiphany that, oh my gosh, maybe we have a problem with left-wing extremism, not right-wing extremism. No, they're not going to do that. What they're going to do is shut it down. What they'll do is bury it. If you call and flood this hotline with real instances of left-wing extremism, violence, vandalism, motivated by hate against the right and conservatives or Israel or whatever it is, and they start to realize that that is what they're getting predominantly, this hate crime hotline will last 6 months. 6 months. And they'll shut it down as they should, because we already have a hate crime hotline. It's called 911. Insane. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, speaking of unhinged things, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal compares ICE to terrorists, literally, directly. We'll talk about that next. First, everyone's heard of DOGE, but have you heard of the Department of Retirement Efficiency? No? Well, that's because it doesn't exist. But you know what does exist? Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham, the Know Your Risk podcast. They also have something called the Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. This is where you go if you want a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Zach and his team, this is what they specialize in. They specialize in managing risk, which, you know, certain people might be willing to have and absorb a little bit more risk depending on where they are in their lives. But if you've got your hard-earned retirement all planned and plotted and you don't want anything to put it in jeopardy, get a second opinion today. Like, look, risk is always part of the equation, But whether you have a passive money manager, an active money manager, it absolutely makes a difference. So schedule your free risk review now. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark's always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Don't put it off. Go to KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal comparing ICE, yes, federal agents engaged in lawful immigration enforcement efforts, to literal terrorists. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oh, man. It's one of these. Pramila, what happened to you? What happened? I feel like I got a sneeze. I'll let you know. I'm good right now. It's coming on, though. I genuinely used to love talking to Congresswoman Jayapal. Now, I never really ever agreed with her. Even when I was in mainstream news, I was still closer to the right than the left. But I used to love, she was so nice, and I'm sure she is still nice in those personal face-to-face conversations. But just to see how far to the left she's gone and how much she's really leaned into socialism, it is just upsetting to me, because I think she's smarter than this. But I, you know, maybe you're just eager for clicks. I don't know. So she had a town hall and part of it wasn't public because it involved immigrants, illegal aliens, and so they closed it off and it was private because, I don't know, maybe they felt like they could speak more freely. But right after that, according to the Spokesman Review, she called ICE a terrorist force. In a visit to Spokane, it says, she said, quote, ICE is acting like a terrorist force. I never thought I'd see a day where people were being kidnapped and disappeared by masked men. The Seattle representative noted this fear is apparent among immigrants with legal status as much as undocumented immigrants. No, it's not. People are just feeling fear and resignation, she said when asked what she heard from the roundtable. I heard this fear that members of this community feel they can't go out of their homes, and resignation that there is nothing they can do because it is the federal government. So she said that, and then she's doubled down on it, tripled down on it. She said this on X, ICE is acting like a terrorist force, so she's not hiding from this. She definitely is regurgitating it. She said people across the country of all legal statuses, including U.S. citizens, are being kidnapped and disappeared off the street by masked men. No oversight, no accountability, complete lawless. It's crazy to me to call ICE lawless when they're out there detaining people who are in the country illegally, many of whom have committed very serious crimes in this country. She was asked about it on CNN, and I think this is the clip where she's, because the White House responded, right? She asked to respond to the White House. Here's a clip.
Also, you posted on social media that, quote, ICE is acting like a terrorist force, and the White House told CNN that your quote, disgusting comments warrant an immediate apology. They called ICE officers heroic. They're saying they're, quote, simply doing their jobs and enforcing immigration law with the utmost professionalism, and that dangerous smears deranged leftists like Jayapal radicalize their supporters to violently attack and obstruct federal law enforcement because of comments like Jayapal's assaults against ICE agents have increased 500% this year, and that number will go even higher if Jayapal doesn't stop with her smears. What is your reaction to that?
What is deranged and cruel and outrageous is that literally we are seeing ICE agents, I assume they're ICE agents, they say they are, they don't have any identification, they're wearing masks, they're in plain clothes, they are coming and kidnapping and disappearing people on the streets of the United States.
Yeah, kidnapping, this whole kidnapping thing. Law enforcement engaged in lawful arrests is not kidnapping. I know that you guys know that. I don't know why they continue to say this as if it makes any sense in the world. Now, I don't particularly like ICE agents having to be fully masked up. I don't particularly love it either. They work for us. Police work for us. I wish we could be living in an environment where deranged leftists weren't following them home from work, doxing their faces and home addresses on social media, or in the case of Seattle and Tacoma, hanging up flyers around town with the faces, names, and addresses of ICE agents So maybe, Congresswoman, a better messaging would be, look, yeah, there's been a 500% increase in assaults on ICE agents. There are stories of ICE agents being followed home, of them fearing for their safety. So unequivocally, I condemn that. People need to stop doing that. And then we can be in an environment where they feel safe to show their faces out in the community. But you can't condemn one and not recognize why they're covering their faces to begin with. Because people who follow you and who are hearing your messaging, painting them as literal terrorists, think it's justified to assault them and to harass them and to dox them and to follow them home. So you're contributing to an environment where they feel like they have to hide their face, and that's very obvious. But she'll never cop to that. She'll never admit to it. And as someone who, frankly, has been made, Congresswoman, to feel unsafe in your own home, and I know that has happened to you, which is wrong and which we've condemned, the same when it happened to even Shama Sawant when people were leaving human feces on her lawn. No one should ever be made to feel unsafe in their own home. And the fact that you won't recognize what ICE agents are going through, but then you'll complain about them masking up is insane, especially coming from someone who's been doxxed and harassed in their home. It's just wild that we can't get to that place. But think about that, acting like a terrorist force. Think of what terrorists do. Terrorists behead people. Terrorists bomb things. Terrorists rape and murder. These are ICE agents. These are Americans who are out there protecting their communities, arresting child rapists, arresting murderers. And yeah, are they arresting some people whose only crime has been entering the U.S. illegally? Yes, because that's a federal law. There is a federal law against doing that. So if you have a problem with it, then stand on CNN and advocate getting rid of the federal law that says you can't come into the U.S. illegally. And then find out the situation that we'll be in as a country. But she doesn't want that. No one's going to advocate for, at least not publicly, as a member of Congress, doing away with all immigration law. So as long as it exists, we have to enforce it, right? You just don't like it. It's just wild. And here's, I think, I was asked about this the other day. Like, what should we do, right? And forgive me for like waxing poetic about it and acting like people are going to be able to get together in kumbaya and actually fix anything in this freaking country, which is never going to happen. But the whole immigration system, we all agree it's broken. Clearly, it's not working. But it's broken for different reasons. And it breaks in different ways depending on who's in power. I mean, Biden just forgot we had an immigration system. And so we had millions of people pour into this country, totally unvetted. Clearly, that's wrong, right? You have a situation where President Donald Trump and his deportation efforts might be hurting industries that in our country rely an awful lot on illegal immigrant labor, unfortunately. Like farms, like hotels and hospitality. So that's not ideal either because, gosh, now we're in a situation where we can't rebuild that workforce very quickly. But as I've said, the sanctuary policies actually make that worse. And we've talked about this a lot, how when you have a sanctuary state and you release a violent illegal alien from jail and don't tell ICE, they've got to go out into the community, they've got to track that person down, and then they're going to arrest everyone. And the Trump administration has already said that. You make us go out into a community, put our agents in danger, put the community at risk, serving these high-profile warrants, dangerous warrants, then we're going to, as a result, round up everyone who's illegal who we come into contact with during that process. And I think that's fair. So the sanctuary policies actually are leading to more deportations of people who wouldn't be otherwise considered high priorities. And Democrats won't acknowledge that either. So here's what I think needs to happen. In a perfect world, I get it. We're not in a perfect world and no one can work together on anything. What we need to do is blue state governors, if they actually cared about this, if they actually cared about, hey, we need to protect these immigrants who've lived here for 10, 20 years, who are working, have their kids in school, have otherwise not been committing any offenses. You need to say to the Trump administration, hey, we're blue state governors, we're sanctuary states, we are ready to amend our sanctuary policies. We are ready today to help ICE deport violent illegal aliens who are in our jails, who are in our prisons. We will give you the names of every single one of them. We will give you the locations of every single one of them, whether it's a jail, whether it's a prison, whether it's their home address, who have law violations in our states. And we will facilitate with our local law enforcement the safe capture of those individuals for deportation. If you agree not to carry out these other enforcement actions in our communities. I actually think the Trump administration would bite on that, to say we're going to work together to get the worst of the worst out of our country as quickly and as safely as possible. But then you can't be in our communities carrying out immigration enforcement efforts at roofing companies. And that's the deal that we're going to make for the time being. I actually think that that could lead to an incredible amount of progress. And then on the back end, we're going to work together in Congress to fix the broken immigration system, to try to find a way, a path to legal citizenship for the people who've been here, who've been working, who haven't committed new law violations, and then to be able to speed up our lawful immigration process and our vetting. It's really not that hard. I mean, everybody knows what needs to be done to fix the immigration system, but nobody wants to do it because it requires give and take. And nobody wants to take, or nobody wants to give, they just want to take. DACA is the perfect example. DACA recipients should have received citizenship a long time ago. Both sides have said they want to do it, and they won't do it because they want something for it. They want something in exchange. So the left and the right, I mean, the left is a far bigger problem when it comes to immigration, because they say all these nice things about, you know, how, oh my gosh, you know, how we want it to be. And then on the back end, they act like they have the moral high ground, the moral superiority. Yet they won't like give an inch. It's just insane stuff. And Jaipal, terrorist force, you're going to get ICE agents killed. And you won't take accountability for it, obviously. You want everyone else and Donald Trump to mind his language, and they're even all these things, then you call ICE agents terrorists. It's absolutely disgusting, frankly. All right, coming up next in national news, is it farewell to rainbow sidewalks? Are we going to take the rainbow back? Well, if the U.S. Department of Transportation has its way, the answer is yes. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. It only takes a little bit of time, so schedule the First Mark Challenge as soon as we're done with the show today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Be like, okay, Brandy, you've told me enough. I'm going to do it now. Schedule time for the First Mark Challenge. After you schedule it, then you just got to gather your current insurance information so you can send it to them so they can look over it. And then you'll have a call. You'll go over your current insurance. They'll talk to you about your insurance needs. You know, what's going on? You just can't, you're paying too much, don't have the insurance you need, paying for stuff you don't even know what it is or if you need. They're going to sort that all out. They're going to go talk to their many, many carriers at their disposal, and they're going to try to get you better insurance at a better price. And they're going to do it all for free. Never pay First Mark anything for their services. Become a member of the First Mark family like me, Nicole, Undivided, so many Undivided viewers and listeners. Jacob emailed us and says he finally did the First Mark challenge. They saved him $600 on their home, $2,000 a year on their family's cars. So $2,600 a year? What would you do with $2,600 a year? Why would you be giving that to insurance companies when you don't need to? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, in some national news that's not OBB related, OBBB related, this is fascinating. I have my thoughts on it, but I want to hear your thoughts on it first, because it is our daily subscriber show poll question. So the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Transportation sent out a letter to every governor in the country, red states, blue states, and basically said the rainbow sidewalks got to go. Now, it's not specific to the rainbow sidewalks, but he's basically saying any sort of political messaging on roadways, crosswalks, not sidewalks, crosswalks, it's got to go because it's a distraction. So he's talking about how, you know, overall across the country, traffic fatalities continue on a downward trend from the previous year. But he says we still have more to do. He said the number of deaths is still unacceptable. So he says he wants to improve safety and mobility, eliminate distractions, and keep people and goods moving throughout the United States. So he says, the Safe Roads National Initiative will focus on the non-freeway arterials within your state, including safety and operation at intersections and along segments, consistent and recognizable traffic control devices, including crosswalk and intersection markings, and orderly use of right-of-way that is kept free from distractions. So they are asking, I don't know if at this point it's an order, but I do know they are requesting that all states eliminate any sort of political messages or artwork from roadways, including crosswalks. It says roads are for safety, not political messages or artwork. Now, of course, the predominant thing that that would apply to is rainbow crosswalks. Because what he's arguing is That's a crosswalk for an intended purpose and needs to be marked for safety reasons a particular way. And then if you've got some of these other artwork things like the roadway outside the East Precinct that was transformed into a Black Lives Matter mural, and it said Black Lives Matter on the road. I think it's been since been removed. But he's arguing that's a distraction. We're focused on safe streets and roadways. So all that artwork, all the political speech that's sprayed onto the roads or whatever it is, that's a distraction. It's got to go. So, look, I think the question I'm struggling with is he doing it because he actually thinks it's a distraction? Or is he doing it because they want to get rid of the rainbow crosswalks?
Or does it matter?
Or does it matter? Now, I think he's doing it because they want to get rid of... I think this is the forced unwokeification of America. That's what you're watching with the Trump administration. It is, for blue states who won't comply, the forced unwokeification of America. And I love it.
I'm all in.
I'm all in. I think it's great. I think it's way overdue. I'm so over it. I don't need everywhere I look to be a different virtue signal that's being forced upon me and my eyeballs. I don't need it. I don't need our public spaces to be an ode to who you want to sleep with and have sex with. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm all in for the forced unwokeification of America. But I like when people are honest brokers. I wish he'd just come out and said, we're getting rid of the rainbow sidewalks. And given and not made up a justification for it. Now, are they a distraction? I guess. If you're looking at that and not looking at the road ahead of you, like, oh, look at this rainbow sidewalk. And then you're just hitting people in the intersections. But I don't think anyone's confused as to whether that's a crosswalk.
But if you specify it, they'll find a way around it. So right. This way, all done.
Everything, all done. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about Secretary Duffy's letter, and I said, do you agree with the directive? Yay or nay? Nicole, do I even have to ask
you? I'm all yay.
All yay. Now, and do you think that it's because of it's a safety issue?
You know what? I'll say that I think that that might be part of it. So I was mentioning this earlier, but there was a sloth hanging from a tree in the Bellingham area, and it became this big deal, and they removed it because it was a distraction to drivers, and everybody wanted the sloth back, and so then it kept reappearing, and yeah. They said, no, Washington State Patrol came out and said, that's a distraction. We can't have this sloth. But then just down the road, there's a painted rock that everybody looks at and has looked at for 50 years, yeah. I think, and they want to remove it too, but for a different purpose. But they're not consistent with any of this messaging. So I'm all about consistency. And I also believe, like, we don't need to be spending tax money on painting sidewalks that belong to all of us, and
yeah.
Which include maybe people that don't support the rainbow
and then
alphabet
sending people to prison if they leave a skid mark in a rainbow sidewalk and charging them with a hate crime.
So let's just remove this from distraction to society.
Because yeah. The other thing is, like, you know what's really freaking distracting when you drive down the highway? What's graffiti. The graffiti
exactly.
All over everything.
We try to remove it.
It yeah. Just pops up, but they don't take that very seriously, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'd love this to be big enforcement on graffiti and doing all that if we're really looking at it from a distraction perspective.
Yep.
And I just choked on something.
And then if you're not gonna, then bring back the sloth.
Yeah, Nicole's really pissed off about that sloth.
Very cute.
She loves the sloth.
I love looking at the sloth.
So a lot of you, 95%, are saying, yes, you agree with this. Amelia, most of the stuff that vandals put on the roads, I don't agree with. So why should I be forced to be subjected to it? Papa Woody, pandering to any single side, utilizing taxpayer money, speaking as a marginalized person in Washington State, absolutely marginalizes all of us. Papa Woody, what kind of marginalized person are you? How am I marginalized? Come on, I gotta have something. I gotta think of something. Nothing that marginalizes me?
I mean, you grew up kind of poor, right?
Yeah, but I'm not poor anymore. What marginalizes me? You're like deaf, so you're disabled.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, Nicole's disabled. Let's see.
Hearing impaired.
Sorry. At least I didn't use the R word, okay? I know it's making a comeback, but I won't use it on the show. Cynthia.
Dang, what are you? I'm trying
perfect.
To think of one thing. Jeez.
I mean, I'm beautiful, smart, you know, middle class, if not probably upper middle class. I don't know. I don't know what middle class is anymore. I'm white. I'm cisgender.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're female.
I'm straight.
So
I'm a chick. I'm a chick.
There you go.
There it is. I am marginalized, okay? And I demand free things.
There you go.
You to feel bad for me. I am a victim. All right. Cynthia, I don't know if I agree with it or not. I've never thought about it, actually, so I'm not answering the poll just yet. I'm going to think about it and do some research, then I'll come back to you and let you know. That's what I love about our viewers.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, Brandy, I'm not going to answer something I don't know anything about. Yeah. Let's see over on Locals if my button will work. Matthew Cook, government-funded political messaging is taxpayer-funded forced speech, which in my mind is a violation of 1A. Yeah, and when you look at the cost of these sidewalks, it's insane. They'll spend like $100,000 putting in. It's like, you give me that paint. If we're going to do it anyway, I'll do it for $5 plus the cost of paint.
Yep.
I'll do it for five. I'll do it for free plus the cost of paint. But I don't want to do it, so I won't do it. You know what I mean? Let's see. Todd Welch, USDOT has bigger issues to deal with, and this is not something that rises to the federal level. Federal needs to realize that we need safe bridges, a robust interstate system, parts that are modern and efficient. I don't care about the color or designs of my crosswalks. Local elections have consequences, and these are local issues. See, and that's where it sort of tends to be like, is it overreach? You know, is the federal government putting its fingers in our soup too much, you know?
Yeah, but I like his point on, you know, that so we just had to raise the gas tax because we need to take care of our roads.
Right.
But then we're wasting money on these things.
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, no, what he's saying, he's talking about how.
I know. Government. Oh, okay. But I'm just saying he mentions that they need to redirect money towards whatever, too. So anyway, that made me think of the. Yeah. We just had to raise the gas tax 6 cents this week. And yet we're wasting money on those.
Yeah. Every time I drive by a marquee on a gas station, I'm like, wow, I'm really happy to see Governor Inslee's legacy is still intact. It's his number one legacy, our higher gas prices.
No, every time I think that if we ran that initiative again, we might
maybe
be able to get it back.
Do you have a couple $1 million?
I know. Come on, Brian.
Oh yeah, Brian, just cough up your money.
Because I think people have finally, I mean, as we're hearing all this, all the national news is how great the gas prices are all across the country. And doesn't look great here.
No, it's terrible. Cynthia, as a taxpayer, I paid for the roads, and for political messages being painted on my roads that often run the opposite of my beliefs is just political bullying. Plus, these paintings are a driver distraction. So yeah, maybe. I think it's a matter of priorities for me. Like, is this really the issue the USDOT needs to be focused on when inarguably our transportation system is in such a state of disrepair?
It's a letter.
It's a letter. Nicole's totally down with it. I think it's fine. I think it's unnecessary. I don't want the crosswalks, but I think we have stronger arguments than distraction for the crosswalks, like the taxpayer funding. It's a political message. It's stupid. There's businesses. You'll go down some roads, every business, all year round, not just in June. They'll have big pride flags from their windows. Let private citizens on their private property display their personal sexual celebration and preferences.
Yeah,
and leave it out of the roads.
The house in Seattle where there's like the roof that cuts through the woman's breast. And now there's like a... I don't know what you're talking about. What? The painted house along the freeway in Seattle?
Oh!
You know, where there's like the pinup that has like the roof goes through her breast.
Well,
otherwise she'd be naked.
If they want to do that with their own house, fine. Yeah. It's kind of annoying, but jeepers. All right. So I guess we all know where we stand on that. Get rid of the sidewalks. And you know what? Our state will spend millions suing over that.
I bet they'll do.
Millions.
I bet they're already determined to paint more.
Well, no. And then they'll spend millions suing. Mm-hmm. The federal government to keep the rainbow sidewalks. 100, it's just ridiculous. All right, we'll get to comments and a patriotic sanity check coming up. First, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, look into becoming a member of RHA, the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. The policies around being a housing provider in our state, as you know, are truly unhinged. So don't go it alone. Make sure RHAWA can help you navigate sort of the all the documents that are needed, keep up to date on the laws, make sure you're not running afoul of any of the crazy things Democrats have pushed through in Olympia. Rent control, of course, is coming online. So you want to make sure that you have someone on your side to navigate all of that craziness. And RHAWA is the person that you want on your side. And if you want to get involved, a good way to do that is to go to their Engage conference that's happening October 22nd and 23rd at Mayden-Bauer Center in Bellevue. You can sign up at RHAWA.org. I'm going to be speaking there. So if you're interested in housing policy, if you're interested in becoming a landlord, you're currently a landlord, whatever it is. It's actually a really fun conference. You'll hear from politicians. You'll hear from people who are engaged in building and who are currently landlords about everything happening on the housing front in Washington. And you'll hear from me, which is fun, isn't it? Because you don't hear from me enough, apparently. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Okay, let's get to some comments, although I want to give a shout out. I keep getting sent weapons in the mail, which I love. So after Antifa sprayed me in the eye with wasp killer and pushed me around, this company, Advisor Tactical Products, I had to make sure that what they sent me was legal before I talked about it on the show. They didn't send it for a shout out, but I wanted to give them a shout out. They sent me some taser gear. Yeah, I got, they said, to protect you against Antifa. I got a shooty taser, you know, like the cops use. I could shoot you from here, Nicole.
Wow.
Yeah. You want it on air?
No.
Why not? I've been tased before.
I'm sure you have.
Well, for...
I've seen people tased.
Yeah. For...
It doesn't look pleasant.
For my news job, not because I committed a crime.
Right, and, right. You know,
and then they gave me this taser stick that's like a flashlight, but then the end, so it's a flashlight, and then you can go get up close and zzz somebody with it, but then it has these barbs on it that are for cutting flesh. Well, yeah, if I'm in hand-to-hand combat and I'm trying to tase them, but I can also jab them with it. So anyway, I just love it.
Cutting flesh.
I love our viewers. So Advisor Tactical Products. So I was like, oh my God, this is so nice. They sent all this stuff to me for free, and a knife and some cool cups and coffee. And I was like, can we give you a shout out on the show? They're like, well, we don't need one, but sure. So they also run oldarmy.com, which is really cool. It's like all this American-made stuff. We talked about this on the show the other day, right? There should be a website for like American-made stuff.
Yeah.
They said the best thing to help support us in our mission is to promote oldarmy.com. Every purchase of Old Army products helps us give back to support our nation's heroes. I love that. That's awesome. So Old Army, they got Old Army barbecue, wing sauce. They got coffee. They got ammo, knives, merch on the website, all sorts of stuff. And they donate and give back to support military veterans, their families, who gave us so much. So I love it. I love it. Old Army. Make sure I get that right. Can't read my own writing. Oldarmy.com. Oldarmy.com. So thank you for the items to protect myself against Antifa. Some people were like, hey, can I send you a gun? I'm like, I don't think so. It's like, I already got a gun. I don't need a gun. But yes, people were very interested. Somebody offered to teach me Krav Maga. Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I got all these offers of assistance keeping safe from Antifa. So thank you, oldarmy.com. That was very nice of you guys. I appreciate it.
A lot of people offered to be your personal body.
Yeah. We have bodyguards. It's just we can't just go in guns blazing shooting people.
Right.
But next Monday on the show, Nicole will demonstrate. I'll use Nicole to demonstrate my new taser product. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. Of course. Although I've been
turning
tased.
Turning right back on you.
I've been tased. So I feel like, to be fair, we should both experience it. All right. We'll get to comments. You're like, just shut up and move on. Okay. I'll shut up and move on. All right. Comments. Old Sub Sailor. The Socialist Democratic Party is so lost right now. They keep aligning on the opposite side of the people. I suspect the midterm elections will be a disaster for them. One can only hope, because if they lose in the midterms, because usually the other party out of power makes gains in the midterms, then I think that will be really significant. Dale Davies, if Dems don't like the lower taxes, they're free to send a check or bank draft to the United States Treasury, 1500 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., or you can keep the money and be a hypocrite. Yeah, so if Dems didn't like the one big beautiful bill and they want to pay more taxes, they're welcome to send that additional money to the Department of Treasury.
Please do.
On the Seattle Times being an absolute joke, and I really mean this, the Seattle Times is never going away. You know, it's not going to fold. But the only thing that'll fix it, I think, is this forced realization through financial devastation that they have to do things different. I think a lot of people still, whether you're willing to admit it or not, get a passive Seattle Times in the mail. There are businesses, like maybe you own a shop and you sell the Seattle Times in the shop. Maybe you have, you know, a subscription to SeattleTimes.com, or you click on Seattle Times stories because it's the first thing that pops up. All of it has to stop. If you own a shop and you sell a stack of Seattle Times, tell them, come get your newspapers, come take your rack. We're not selling them here anymore. Here's why. Tell them why. If you have, or your 90-year-old parents still get the Seattle Times to the house, you tell your parents, you're not getting that anymore. You call and you tell them why.
Cut off.
And do not click and share their content. I mean, we have to do it for the show, right? So I'm being a little bit of a hypocrite there. But, you know, how am I going to tell that
story? We'll do it for you. So
yeah,
you don't
we'll do
have
it for
to.
You because every single thing, mm-hmm. every click drives revenue, drives ad sales, everything it is. You have to shut them out of your life entirely.
For sure don't click on the ads.
Absolutely don't click
do
on the ads.
Do not do that.
Even though the ads are tailored for you. Right. All right. On the hate crime hotline, being up and running, Papa Woody, it's about Marxism, everything the WA Dems do is about Marxism. Yeah. Let's see. Diana, I was going to report Jayapal for some of her hate speech. Yeah. I mean, honestly, she called ICE terrorists. So, mm-hmm. you know, and make note of, because I think when they come out with the statistics, what are they going to do? How are they going to spin it? What are they going to hide if it was all people calling in reporting the left? They'll probably just do a bulk like, oh,
it'll just disappear.
No, it'll be like, oh, there was a million hate crime reports, but we don't differentiate on what the reports were.
And we don't you wonder what their little checkbox yep. thing is? We should do a FOIA for that, like how they, you
right.
know, how they keep track, what they're keeping track of.
We'll have to, some of that mm-hmm. has to be mm-hmm. disclosable. So we'll have to do that as well. But do what I told you to do. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm really bossy today. Sherry, wow. Hate crime hotline is absolutely a tool of target to target conservatives and pushing the progressives narrative.
Because we're not the whiners. The other side is.
I've done a lot of whining on the show today.
Well, on the show is one thing because that's okay. That's the job. But honestly, I think that's a lot of the problems we have is that our people just go on with their lives
yeah.
and keep living it. And
yeah.
everybody else is marching in the streets for dumb reasons. And then everybody, you know,
right. Well, we're not
whining.
Trying to do that. Like,
or even Hakeem Jeffries today. Just, I mean, it was a tantrum. That's a tantrum.
Yeah. yeah. Well, it's like, I'm not, something might be a microaggression, allegedly, or bother me, but like, I'm going to immediately move on with my life.
Right.
Like, okay, that's fine.
That's what you
except
do.
If you're left lane camping, I swear to God, to the blue Toyota Prius camping in the left lane on I-90 this morning, yeah. you should have your license taken away. License should be revoked.
You'd march for that.
I'd march for that. Arrest left lane campers. All right. Critical Thinking Try It says, serious question. Can I use the hotline to report that I can't get help on home down payment or tax break in Washington because I'm white? Yeah. You can say, yep. hey, I'm... Because it's a bias incident mm-hmm. hate line. Like, hey, I couldn't get this because I'm white and only black people can get it. 100% because they're not allowed to pick and choose what qualifies because they're not an investigatory arm of any kind. So they have to put it down. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then we'll find out, won't we? Jayapal calling ICE a terrorist force. Todd says if legal immigrants are afraid, it is because of people like Jayapal. She should be setting the record straight for legal immigrants. Yeah, they can't remove a legal immigrant from the country. That's just crazy. They can't remove a legal, like an American mm-hmm. citizen from the country. You can't just revoke it for no reason. Crazy.
Just in general, I feel like we need to get really, we need to get a lot better on messaging because
yeah.
they're very consistent and they're very good at yeah. making you see it. And the brainwash side consumes it and goes with it. But the right is having a real hard time with messaging because what they should have been saying is that, yeah, if you have kids, $1,000 per kid if this
yeah.
bill doesn't go through.
Yep.
They should have focused on that. $1,000 per kid if this bill doesn't go through. But instead, we're worried about people that are taking advantage of Medicaid being kicked off Medicaid. Like, that's their messaging. And people that are legit on Medicaid are scared they're going to be kicked
yep.
off. But
the
it
left's
doesn't,
good at fear.
Our messaging is terrible.
The left is really good at fear as a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Fear and worry
oh.
and dread and all of these
fear
things. And that's what
strong.
Creates this victim mentality because mm-hmm. The fear is being forced on them every single day. And
right.
it's just really sad, actually, to live like that. Milkman, what would happen to a mega sidewalk or road? It would be destroyed immediately. And it's not a hate crime, technically, because politics is not a protected class. Hello, Watermelon. That rainbow paint is brighter than the lines on the road elsewhere, especially when it rains. Yeah. Honestly, some of the white, maybe we should have more bright colors on the road for the actual lines that we need to pay attention to. Because if you've ever been driving on a road, when it's raining, you can't mm-hmm. see those white lines anywhere. You can't see them at all.
I'm not sure what you'd be able to see better. I think it's the reflective factor that we need to improve.
Yes.
Or
correct.
Just the updating the lines because they get worn out. But
yeah. Let's see. Jesus with a $20 super chat, and it's G-E-E-Z-U-S.
Wow.
Each side sees the other's claims as dishonest or irrational, not because they disagree on what is true, but because they can't agree on what something, why something is true. We no longer share standards of evidence. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Cynthia, $5 Brandy birthday super chat. Thank you. We're still celebrating my birthday. I love it.
All week, man.
Mapache says merch store should have a Brandy wig in it. Thank you.
Somebody also mentioned that we should have Florida Report merch.
We really should.
So I agree.
We've been working diligently in getting the new merch online. We're hoping next week. It's a long story, but our website went through all these hoops we have to jump through to restart our merch store because they have all these new rules and regulations around it. So hopefully next week we'll have the merch store up and running again. Love it at undividedpod.com. Okay, good comments, all of that. I think that's great. We're going to get to our closing sanity check and then talk a little bit about the Sunday show. First, if you're looking to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Number one, he's just a cool dude. We love Wes. Love us some Wes Jones. And I just think if you're going to go through the stressful process of selling your home, you might as well go through that process with someone as awesome as Wes is, but he's also very good at what he does. He's been through all the market ups and downs, and he's weathered the storm because he is good at what he does and because he delivers for his clients. So the first thing he's going to do is give you a free market analysis. You can kind of set your expectations, because I think that's the first step of deciding to sell your home is, how is it going to perform on the market? What's the market look like right now? So he'll do that. And then he can talk to you about other things they offer that you're not going to get elsewhere, like their Listing Boost Concierge service, which makes your home stand out amongst all the other listings. I mean, you look at any of their listings, go to sellwithwes.com and look at the listings that they have up. They're beautiful. I mean, the work they do, the marketing they do, the pictures, the video, the home tours, it really does just, I think, add this extra level of, like, what do you call it? Je ne sais quoi. To the listings. I mean, you all know, you go on a Redfin or whatever, you know when you and I always look at houses we can't afford, and you see one that has crap pictures, you're like, nope, go to the beautiful ones.
Scroll left, or which one is it?
You tell me, Nicole, I'm not on dating apps, because I have a husband. Anyway, go to sellwithwes.com and you will not scroll.
Swipe.
Yes, away. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Or we just end the show early today. Nicole's always really struggling with sanity check. I think you want to end the segment. All right. I didn't know what to do today. I wanted to do something kind of patriotic. There's been this news going around. Here's the headline from The Hill. American pride declining to all-time lows, poll finds. Now, that's stupid, and I'm not even going to read the poll to you, but it's been all over the internet. Oh, people are less proud than ever to be an American. I can't relate with that, because every single day I am exceptionally more proud than the day before to be an American. And I get it. If you don't like the president at any given time, you might feel a certain way about the country. One of the interesting takeaways from the polls, the poll is that Democrats tend to just always be less happy to be Americans, even if they have a president of their persuasion in power. But look, I think a lot of this is being fed to them and to us. You know, we just talked about Congresswoman Jayapal, you know, comparing ICE agents to a terrorist force. And there's all this narrative that's being spewed out there that's designed to make you hate your country and to hate your fellow countrymen and not to be proud to be an American. And inarguably, it's absurd when you look at all these other places on planet Earth where you cannot compare the wonderful gift of being an American to living anywhere else. And so if I had advice for you this weekend, it would be to step away from your computers, step away from your social media, and enjoy time on Independence Day, reflecting on all the wonderful things about being a citizen of this great country of ours, where so many people want to come and enjoy and be part of. And we were blessed, many of us, to be born here. And I think that's something that we cannot underestimate and understate. So be proud to be an American. Reflect on that this weekend. Step away from your screens, touch some grass, eat a hot dog, drink a beer, and fire off a bottle rocket. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I don't know why I immediately go into a British accent when we're celebrating our escape, our independence. Stupid British. I'm just kidding. Think of where we'd be. Although we would be wearing cool hats and doing high tea, but still, I'd rather have a hot dog and beer. We have a great emotional episode of Sundays with Subscribers for our subscribers coming up, talking about this disastrous plan for the state of Washington to become drug dealers. Well, as you know, that would be absolutely deadly and detrimental to so many people struggling with addiction in our state. So we're going to have a fantastic interview on that subject that I think will bring you to tears. So we'll have that for subscribers on Sunday. If you're not a subscriber, become one. Undividedpod.com, and I cannot end without singing a page. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for ample waves of grain. Goodbye.